Hello and welcome to Grappling with Fatherhood, a podcast where we talk about fatherhood, jiu-jitsu, the lessons learned in each, and where they sometimes overlap. My name is Blake Kosmeyer. I am a black belt in jiu-jitsu and the father of two small kids. My co-host, as always, is Uday Malhotra.
What's up, everybody? Uday Malhotra here, black belt in BJJ and proud father of two amazing daughters.
Uday, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing well. I'm doing well, man.
And yeah, it's cub season,
you
dude.
You already know. It's a cub season, and the boys in blue are 4-2 right now, you know, and they're starting off nicely. And Van, it's funny, before I came out here, Van just, she's like, hey, if you're going to freak out every time the Cubs give up a run or, you know, lose your shit, can you just watch it in privacy? Like, none of us want to hear that. So I, you know, I'm like, all right, the first week is done. I'm going to reel it in a little bit. I get a little on edge here, but it's going well, man. You know, the week is going well. And this past weekend was, actually yesterday was Van's birthday. We went to Disneyland. The kids can never find out.
Happy birthday,
yeah,
Van.
Yeah, happy birthday, my love. She's probably going to listen to this episode. So happy birthday, baby. We went to Disneyland without the kids for the first time. I had some access to some free tickets, and she's like, let's do this thing. I want to experience what this is like. I want to try the ride. She's not a Disney adult. Nothing wrong with that, but she's not. But she just likes rides, and it's wine and food festival there. So, yeah, we got to enjoy that and just have a nice kind of walk around the park. It was raining like crazy, but we're fine, you know? Yeah, man. How about you?
Can I ask what your favorite thing to eat is at Disneyland?
Man, I actually, so every time I've been, I've avoided like the junk food. And because I was doing like, every time I had gone, I was in the middle of Hard 75. And so I got like the most boring shit ever, dude. I would get the, at Disney California Adventure, they have this stand that sells like chicken legs. And
I know what you're talking
that's
about.
That's what I would eat, the chicken legs. And my kids would be getting like funnel cakes and like these like gigantic corn dogs. And like, you know, Van was, when we were, you know, we were there for the food and wine festival, like I said. And, you know, every stand, she's like, all right, let's get this pork belly, shrimp, blah, blah, blah. Like, cool. Let's do it. I'm free now. I'm not doing this Hard 75, right? And so we did that. And
yeah.
Also, the first time I tried Giardelli's ice cream at Disneyland and or at DCA, California Adventure, right? And so good. So good.
Yeah.
Like, so bad for me. So unhealthy. But this is the first time I had it without it just being a bite of my children's ice cream.
Yeah.
So good.
That's great, man. Yeah, I haven't been to Disneyland in a very long time, but I grew up, my dad worked for the Mouse, and we got tickets you know, a couple times a year, and my stepmom's mother took me one time, and very nice lady, and she was like, I can't remember, I was like, nah, it must have been like 9 or 10.
Okay.
And she's like, yeah, dude, we'll just do whatever you want to do, you know?
Nice.
Like, and I was like, cool. And so she asked me what my favorite restaurant was. And I was like, oh, my favorite restaurant is the restaurant in the Pirates of the Caribbean,
yeah,
Blue Bayou.
Yeah.
And she's like, really? And I was like, yeah, yeah, it's my favorite restaurant. And she's like, have you ever eaten there before? And I was like, nope. She loves to tell that story, dude.
Did you guys eat there?
But the Monte Cristo at the Blue Bayou is legendary.
I've heard this.
So it's very good.
Yes.
It is. That's all your points for the day.
Yeah,
it's all your points for like 2 days.
Yeah.
Even after walking around Disneyland, it is a gnarly sandwich. Listen, but it is so tasty.
25,000 steps almost. And you tell me I can't burn that sandwich off? All right. I'll buy it. I'll buy it. All right. Okay.
Especially with 48 minutes of jiu-jitsu before you went.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. That was fun. That was fun.
Yeah, good session.
Yeah, man. How about you, man? How are you doing?
We're okay, man. I am sick again. Family is just, we've been pretty much sick since December. And I don't know what's going on. This one is gnarly. It was weird. You know, you and I trained on Saturday morning.
Yep.
I was feeling a little funky. And then I trained with Joe on Sunday. I had a friend over, came train in my garage. And we had a good time. We're playing soccer in the background, in the backyard with the kids. And then Joe goes home. And then I got like chills and fever. And I just immediately start feeling awful. And like in the shower, I can't warm up. And so it's just been, it's been an uncomfortable couple of days. I think I'm probably through it, but I just want to stay away from the gym. Obviously, when you're feeling like this yucky, because you don't want to bring that around everybody.
So you got the Rona?
No, we tested a bunch. Yeah. And we tested a bunch, but I don't have a sense of taste or smell right now.
Oh man.
Which is weird. I've never, even when I had, when I had COVID, I still had taste and smell. So, this is new. It's so weird. And I thought I would be like not eating as much, but instead I'm like, really, I want the flavor to sink in. So I'm like, where's the flavor? And I keep eating more.
Have you seen the TikTok videos on how to supercharge your taste buds after you get COVID? I mean, this might not be COVID, but there's a hack. It involves an orange you set on fire.
Okay, good.
So check that out.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah.
Check that out. It supercharges your taste buds.
But other than being sick, life is good. We're on spring break from Owen's preschool now. My buddy Joe, who we were, I want to say we were white belts together in San Francisco. We got our blue belts. I think we got our blue belts around the same time. He's an awesome dude. I proposed to my wife on a trip that we had to go up and visit them when they lived in Portland.
Oh, wow.
He was
way back,
really good friends. And so he's a marathon runner. He got really into marathoning and took a step away from jujitsu for a while. Okay. And he's also an elite level cyclist. It's kind of a funny story. Like now it's coming back to me. I started training jujitsu. Then I separated my shoulder, had to have surgery. And while I was out on surgery, Joseph started training. And everybody was like, he was a competitive cyclist. I have a background in competitive cycling. People were like, yo, you got to meet this guy, Blake, like when he comes back, cause you guys are going to get along. And like I got there and it was like that, that Spider-Man meme, you know, like pointing. Yeah. At himself, it was like that.
Yeah.
And then we were just easy, fast friends. And so, it's fun having him at the house and training.
That's great, man.
He's sharp, man. He's got really good fundamentals and principles around jiu-jitsu. So it's like he's a purple belt, but like he doesn't make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. I think he's close to his brown.
So he just got his purple.
Okay.
He just
got
his purple. I mean, he had his blue for a really long time, but he just got his purple last year.
Nice.
And I'm not going to weigh in on where he should be in his journey.
Yeah.
But he's good.
Good.
And like his, like I said, his fundamental, he doesn't make mistakes. And, so you have to make better choices.
Yeah. Oh,
to
fun.
Beat him, you know what I mean? Like that's how it goes. Like instead of waiting for him to make a mistake, you have to try and make a better choice before he makes a mistake. So, anyways,
it's good. Well, how long was he in town?
He was just in town for a couple of days.
Okay.
I think like 4 or 5 days. He's also a dad, and he is someone who I have talked about. He's a friend of the pod.
What's up, Joe?
I've talked about on this podcast. I've talked about on the podcast before in terms of giving me really helpful parenting advice.
Yeah.
He has been a great resource to me so throughout the year. So if you hear definitely some borrowed wisdom from Joseph.
Nice.
Anyways, it's good to have him in town. That's about it.
Nice, man.
Just yeah.
What what's grinding your gears these days, my guy?
Sick kids, man. Nothing's grinding my gears. One thing is unfortunate is like maybe I'm the guy that's grinding other people's gears.
What do you mean?
Because, here's the deal. Yeah. I love Legacy, the gym that we train at. I'm averaging like 1 to 2 times there a week.
You got shit going on.
I'm like there once or twice a week. I'm at my house once or twice a week, and I'm at your house once a week. I'm training 4 to 5 times a week, but I'm only a Legacy, and I'm really only a Legacy for like an open mat and a class, like one class. And so I just don't want to be that guy who like gets his black belt and then like is a ghost. So I feel like I might grind someone else's gears.
No, I think people understand, dude. Look, you're a grown adult in your 40s who has two kids, a job. You know, you got shit going on, right? Like, yeah. You know, you're not a 22-year-old who's, you know, competing every weekend, right? Like, you got stuff going on. And when you're there, yeah. You don't pay twice, right? You're there and you're focused on the task at hand, right?
Yeah.
So, man, yeah. No, you're good, dude. I don't think anybody thinks anything of it.
I know what's grinding your gears, so I want to hear you talking about it.
Oh, man. Despite my cheery disposition today, Blake, I have got a few things grinding my gears. So, you know, one of the things that you and I have been doing that I really like is that, you know, when we go to an open mat, we'll roll for several rounds at a time and through the bell. And I really like that because, hey, it gives us a chance to work on a puzzle, right? And on like try and figure things out, right? Like, and sometimes in that like 40-minute round, we'll go hard and sometimes we'll slow down and sometimes we'll get into like these weird entanglements or weird scrambles and we'll work our way out of it. And it's super fun. And it really grinds my gears when people interrupt that, you know? I'm someone who doesn't like to be interrupted in general, right? And when you're in a flow state and you're moving and things are going, like you're just in that flow state, right? Like, and someone comes and interrupts it with something that's like, was this really worth it to interrupt this? It annoys me. And the person who did it, I really like this guy. He's a really good dude.
Yeah, very sweet.
And I know he didn't mean anything by it, but, you know, we were in this flow state and someone was like, hey, let's take a picture. Group picture. Wait, what? We're here to train, guys. We're here to train. We're not here to take pictures. Let's go. Come on. Do it later, right? Like, you see, I was probably one of the more senior black belts there, right? And you're a black belt. And guys, I'm not ready to take the picture right now. I'm doing something, you know? Like, can we pause this? Like, can you give me 10 minutes, right? Like, is this urgent? Do we need to do this now? So, you know, I know he didn't mean anything by it. And to be honest, if I were still mad about something that happened like this 2 weeks ago, I'm the asshole. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't.
No, it was just, it was, it was a beautiful, it was such a good moment because we've been having these really great, like, you know, marathon rounds, right? Like, you get there, you and I get a couple of rounds in. It's funny because if I like do the math and I figure out how much time we train for when we don't rest in between rounds, and it's insane. So I'm like, go in, I get three rounds, warm up with other people. Then you and I start and we'll do, you know, three or four or more rounds in a row. And what's, you get in like, I like deep waters, man. It is uncomfortable. And you can't rely on the clock to save you.
I love that.
So if you get tired, it's so fun. And so if you get tired, you're like, I have to figure out a way to save myself.
Either reach
you know?
In deeper and then or figure it out, right? Lean into the technique.
Or actually do jujitsu.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's like where like, so I have not been, I've been feeling good about my jujitsu lately.
Yeah, you've been
but
sharp.
I don't feel physically very, thanks brother, but I don't feel physically very good. Like I feel like I'm tired and I'm always fighting the sickness, but I'm like, damn, I'm actually doing pretty good. And I think it's because of these situations where you and I are like, in these deep waters and we're able to take that and be like, oh wait, I have some confidence in what the skill that I've spent the last 10 years developing here. Having somebody interrupt that, it's totally, you know, dude, like we're just two guys, we're two dads on a Sunday at the Masters open mat, you know, it's, we can't take ourselves too seriously.
That's it, you know, you're right. And like in the moment I had this super annoyed look on my face because you looked me dead in the eyes like, I know what's grinding your gears this week, buddy. And in the moment I was like, yes. But like, I think by the time I left, by the time the picture was done, I was like, let's get back to it. And I forgot all about it, you know, like,
To be clear, if anything bothered us to a serious extent, we wouldn't be talking about it on a podcast.
Right. And, you know, the guy who did it, his dear friend, and yeah, can't be mad about it. I will tell you something else. I have a couple things, man. We have time, Dan?
Man.
Okay. So
let's go. Let's go. A
couple things. One of the things, jiu-jitsu etiquette, that I'm seeing a lot more lately that is a little bit frustrating to me is, you know, when we're rolling, two black belts are rolling, and a lower belt is in, like, about to run into us, it's really incumbent upon them to get out of the way. And if nothing else, just for their own safety, right? I don't want to see my, like, a heel backstep, like, step on their hand or their face or whatever, right? Like, I don't want to see anybody get hurt. So it's incumbent upon them to really just, hey, make some space, right? Like, be aware of your surroundings. And I've noticed, and, you know, not necessarily at our gym, but, like, I've noticed that start to go away a little bit. And, you know, sometimes it's just like, hey, psst, can you beep, beep right behind you, right? Like, and I will say this too, and I'm a firm believer in this, in that as black belts, it's also up to us to make sure that we don't have that ego. We're like, nah, I can never move, right? Like, dude, like, if I see you're in my space and you both have your back to me and I am on top of Blake and Blake is under side control, it is squarely up to me to get the heck out of the way. Squarely up to me to keep three other people safe. Actually, four, myself included, right? And so there are certain circumstances where you just have to be mindful of your training partners, the one you're rolling with, and the ones around you, and just get out of the way. And I wish I saw that a little bit more from upper belts as well. And so, hey, just move, move, get out of the way, right? Maybe it's me, maybe it's you, but just be respectful, right? I don't want to see anybody get hurt. So that has been grinding my gears.
Quickly, yeah. On that note, I am not a fan of unnecessary hierarchy.
Yeah.
I think it gets in the way.
Yeah.
I think it holds everyone back. Here is why I think it is super important for that rule to exist. It has nothing to do with belt hierarchy. It has everything to do with a clear plan of communication for when that happens. If there isn't a plan in place for when people get close to each other, then no one's going to get out of the way. And so it would be the same to me. I would hold it to the same degree of respect had it been the inverse. Had it been, hey, higher belts get out of the way of the
Absolutely.
Lower belts. Because the whole principle of it is to make people safer, not to reinforce hierarchy. And I think that's what people don't understand. And I think these are people that have never been fucking, you know, yeah. backstepped in the face yeah. before. Is that it's about respecting your training partners and being like, hey, cool, guys, I don't care what the rule is, yeah. but this is the rule, and the rule is here to protect
100%.
Us. So we're going to listen to it. You know what I mean?
I had my nose broken. This might have been before I knew you, but I had my nose broken by a white belt who backstepped into me training. Like, literally, like, it was like a spinning back kick into my face while training. And because of this very situation, right? This is what we're trying
and
to avoid.
And if there's ambiguity there and the lower belts are kind of looking over like, oh, I don't know, are we in trouble or not? And instead, if they go, oh, hey, it's our responsibility to move out of the way of them, and it's very clear, then you just fucking move. And like, this is, to me, this is important because I have also been the person, I have hurt people. I have backstepped into people or elbowed people who are lower belts who didn't move, and I've been like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, you know, like, now I feel like a jerk, now I look like I don't have a sense of spatial awareness,
and I get it can be feel complicated, especially if you're in like a smaller gym, an open mat, right? Like, it can feel complicated. Just, you know, lean on this, right? Like, okay, well, if I see you in my way and you don't see me and I'm the upper belt, I'm glad to get out of the way, dude. But if you do, it's the rules of the road, right? It's just like a stop sign, right? Like,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly. That was, I was just gonna say, it's just like, it's like right of way.
Yeah,
it's like,
man,
whoever got to the stop sign first, you know, person to the right. Like, that's it's that organization, yeah. That like, it's not to reinforce hierarchy. It's simply to make things safer,
exactly.
And that's a better way to understand it.
That's well put, Blake. Well, always.
I hope so.
Always such a poet.
Yeah.
Nice,
appreciate
man.
You, man. Hopefully I'm a poet when we talk a little bit more about this week's episode, which has to do with the way things are delivered.
Yes, and what a segue for that, dude. Communication.
Thanks. You have one more gear to grind. Do you want to talk about it? Because that also segues us into.
And I'm wondering if I should, but I will. And
okay.
I am hesitant because it has to do with communication from a teacher to a student in the classroom with my daughter. And I hope she doesn't listen to this. But, you know, I was scheduled to be a chaperone on Milena's field trip. And
awesome. Highly recommend. I've been a chaperone on multiple field trips. Dads, parents out there, if you get a chance, jump on the hand grenade. It is so cool.
Do it. I was so excited for this, Blake. I was so stoked. I cleared my entire schedule for the whole day, everything, right? And so in the 11th hour, it was like, hey, no, the field trip is the next day. And it was almost like, hey, I told you, you know, no, sorry for the miscommunication, but it's Thursday, not Wednesday. And I'm looking back at the email. I was like, no, it says Wednesday here clearly. And so I was like, look, I'm going to try and move everything around. And, you know, I'm in the middle of multiple interview processes right now, right? And so it's like asking me to move interviews, and I'm happy to do it to spend the extra time with my daughter. But some of them, it's just like, it's super challenging, right? And like some of them are panel interviews with multiple people. Like, you know, like I'm asking four people to like change their schedules who are like pretty senior up, right? Like when this has been scheduled for like weeks at this point. And so I was like, man, I can't, you know, I tried. And so I was like, you know, let's communicate a little cleaner here, right? Like let's, if you had told me this from the jump Thursday, I would have made that work. But we didn't. And so, and that segues into today's episode.
Today we're talking about
communication. Anybody knows Milena's teacher, please don't tell her about this.
Yes. Today we're talking about communication, communication with your kids, communication on the mats, communication when you are teaching on the mats, and communication when you are learning as a student on the mats and even between training partners. I think first up, let's talk a little bit about communicating with your kids. You and I are both at really, I guess you're always at an interesting place when you talk about communicating with your kids, but I'm at a particularly interesting place. So, you know, how do you, for new listeners, Uday and I have, you know, relatively young kids. Mine are, 4 and 1. Uday's are a little older. And so I always think of him as the one having older kids, when really they're still very young.
Yeah.
Four and 8 on your end. Yeah. So how do you reason with a person who doesn't know how to be reasonable, man?
Dude, it's so challenging. I mean, I'm sure you're experiencing with your oldest what I'm experiencing with my youngest. Actually, I don't even know that that's true, because I feel like my youngest, Shia, she's like almost absurdly reasonable. I'm like, why are you this way? Like, why are you so reasonable? Why are you so chill? And like when she gets upset, it's a matter of, hey, come talk to me. Why are you upset? I want to watch TV. Well, it's 8:30 now and your bedtime's at 8:30. Did you brush your teeth? No. All right, well, how are you going to go to sleep, watch TV, and brush your teeth when you have negative 1 minute left? And she'll think to herself, like, you're right. I got to go brush my teeth. I'm late for bed. And she's, like, super reasonable in that regard. Milena, on the other hand, she's also reasonable, but she can get a little bit more emotional at times, especially when she's upset, which is totally normal, especially at that age. And you know, with her, and I'm sure, I think we've talked about this in the past with most kids, right? But like, I feel like when I give her the space to calm down, and sometimes that can look like many different things, right? That can look like me chit-chatting with her. That can look like, hey, why don't you go have a few minutes in your room, just relax, wash your face. She usually, you know, if I give her that space to calm down and then readdress the issue, she's usually able to come to it at and understand. And certainly if I talk to her a day later about it, like, hey, remember when you were upset that you couldn't watch TV at your bedtime? Do you get it now? And she'd be like, yeah, Papa, I understand. And I'll see her then have that same conversation with her little sister when she's freaking out about it, which is like, oh, you don't, it's not your job to do that. It's my job. You don't have to put that burden on yourself, but I appreciate that you are trying, and I appreciate that you're understanding kind of what's the situation is, right? What about you, man? How do your kids react when you're trying to reason with them? And I mean, one of them communicates right now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But a good story about communication is anybody who's had a baby who goes from, like, you know, right around, you know, whatever, 9 to 14 months when they're learning how to walk. My youngest just kind of went through that, and now he's like, he's literally running. It's amazing. But he was having this thing where, like, every night from like 4 until he went to bed, he was just like, either he didn't want to be held, he didn't want to be on the ground, he didn't want to be, it was just fucking frustrated. He was so mad, and he was trying to figure stuff out. And one weekend, he just figured out how to walk. And it was like, oh my God, that was the thing. And like, he wasn't sleeping well, because it's like when babies are having these big cognitive leaps, these are when your sleep regressions happen, right? So parents, hopefully, when you're sitting up there in the middle of the night at like 4 a.m. going, why aren't you going to sleep, kid? It's because their brains are developing. It's because they're going through a cognitive leap, and that some big breakthrough is about to happen. Yeah. There's this nice sort of a good analogy to jiu-jitsu as well, right? And so he can't communicate that. Like, he's just so frustrated, and he wants to be like, Dad, I don't know how to walk, and you guys are all walking around, and my brother, look at him, dude, and he just comes over here and smacks me in the face and then walks away. I can't do anything. Like, I want to walk. Right. And and when he figured it out, it was like, oh my God, everything got so much easier. So this is an interesting way to observe what happens when communication is just not an option, you know? Yeah. Anyways, the other thing is like, I'm a big fan of this book, Never Split the Difference, by Christopher Voss. Have you ever read it?
I haven't, but I've heard of it.
You would yeah, love it. It's he was a CIA hostage negotiator.
That's what I have heard. Yep, that's what I heard about this.
Yeah. And or FBI hostage negotiator. Anyways, one of those. Yep. And the guy is just an insanely skilled communicator, right? Because you have to be. And the whole premise of the book, Never Splitting the Difference, is that everybody thinks of, and we're always taught as we grow up, hey, man, meet me halfway. But what happens when we split the difference, right? When you say, hey, I want pizza for dinner, and I say, hey, I want salad, and you go, okay, we'll meet halfway in between, and we'll have like pizza, salad. Like, nobody gets what they want, right? What happens is, instead of everybody getting half of what they want, no one gets exactly what they want. And I know it doesn't, that it always ends up in one end of the, if somebody gets what they want, then one person at least is happy. If you split the difference, then nobody gets what they want. And I split the difference with my kids, with my oldest, all the time. All the fucking time.
Tell me.
I want 5 M&Ms or whatever. You know, I want 6 M&Ms. Buddy, we're not having M&Ms right now. Dude, you just had whatever.
Yeah.
I want 5. Well, no, dude, we're not having 5 M&Ms. No, no, or no more M&Ms. We're done. Starts losing his shit. Okay, dude, I'll give you 2 M&Ms. I didn't want him to have any M&Ms. He wanted 5.
Yeah.
Well, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, no. That's not how this game goes. Either he gets all the M&Ms, because he basically won, or he gets no M&Ms.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and as parents, we want to be reasonable. And I think it's whatever. But anyways, so the thing is, I know that that is a recipe, is an illogical recipe, yet it is one that in parenting, it feels like it's the right thing to do all of the time. And I don't know that it's not the right thing to do. I just know that when you're negotiating with a hostage, you would never do that. So
I like that a lot. Never split the, I really got to read this book. I've heard a lot of good things about it. When you mentioned it, I was like, I've heard of this. I don't know where I've heard of this, but I've heard of it. And yeah, this sounds like a good one, man.
Christopher Voss, Never Split the Difference. He also has a masterclass too on communication and negotiation. There are a lot of tools in there, by the way. Like if you're a person who's that are helpful with kids that we actually use all the time. So like one of them is like extreme anchoring. So extreme anchoring is something that like if you walk in to negotiate a salary, right? And you say, they're like, okay, so like, what are you looking for? And you're like, oh, I want $250,000 base salary. And they're like, what? And you're like, yeah, that's my base. That's kind of where I'm comfortable, you know? And then we'll talk about equity, et cetera. And they're like, oh, okay. How about, wow, that's a lot of money. How about $150,000? Well, you were making $75,000 at your other job. But to them, they're getting a bargain because they brought you down to $150,000. Right? And so it's like, it's all about how you're walking into the, it's how you anchor the conversation. And with kids, it's super fun. Like we do it all the time with Owen, where we'll be like, I don't know. Like, I just want you to eat like, you know, I'll say like, I want you to eat like 2 pounds of pasta. And he'll be like, what are you talking about? I'm like, okay, just eat the pasta that's on your plate. He's like, okay, I'll just eat the pasta that's on my plate. And I'm like, hell yeah, he ate, cleaned his plate. You know what I mean?
And so, that's not necessarily splitting the difference, right? Because you didn't want him to eat 2 pounds of pasta. You just wanted him to eat right. some pasta. And that's what he did. Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Love it.
It's all kinds of, it's interesting negotiation tactics like that. But some of them work with children. Some of them don't work with children because children aren't necessarily rational.
They're not rational. Well, you know, one of the things that me and Van do is, I think we do a pretty good job of this, is like tag team. You know, like
big fan.
We know when the other person's at the edge. I was at the edge yesterday and I just had like a lot on my mind, and the kids, you know, they're kids and they're just doing kid stuff. They're dragging their feet going to bed, and Van just sensed it. And she's like, okay. Come on, guys, let's go to bed. And she took care of it. And vice versa. Like when I see that shit's about to hit the fan, baby girl, mama's about to blow up right now. Let's move it along. Let's go. Right. Like, and so it's just like leaning on my partner, right? Leaning on who I'm doing this with, right? Like we're in this together. And so, and you know, allowing her the space to lean on me as well.
I will straight up yell from across the house. Hey, babe, you want to trade?
I love it.
Babe, let's trade kids. And like, I'll be like, okay, Owen's been going through some stuff. I don't want to, it's kind of personal stuff. But he's having a hard time with some stuff. Yeah. And it's a thing that we're really trying to negotiate through and talk him through. And he's having a hard time with it. And then, you know, Milo will be in the other room crying. So I'll be over with Owen where he is, and he's just not budging with me. Like today's a good example. Today was this is something we can talk about. He didn't want to get his hair cut. Okay. And, you know, Becca cuts his hair in our kitchen. It's very low pressure. And they just got into a vortex of, you need to cut your hair. I don't want to. You need to. I don't want to. You've done it before. I don't want to. You know what I mean? I'm afraid. And it's like, oh, he's trapped. Like he's trapped in one of those, like, it's like a circuit, like, you know, is loose. And I'm watching Milo and I'm like, babe, straight kids. And like, you know, I hand her Milo, I take Owen. And like, it's like, sometimes you just need to be able to get a little bit of perspective, because it's so crazy how things de-escalate sometimes when the kid is just removed from the environment.
Maybe they just need a different energy. Maybe they just need, you know, different voice. I will tell you, dude, going a little off topic, if you guys are looking for a place to get, you know, if Becca doesn't want to do with doing the haircuts, I know a place in Glendale that does an awesome job with kids' haircuts. They sit in the little race car.
Kids' cuts.
That might be it. Sit in the race car. And they got the movies on. It's awesome.
All right. Yeah. That might be it. Yeah. I went to the barber the first time in a long time recently. And he's like, oh, I want to go to a barber. I was like, okay, big man. So he was talking about maybe wanting to do that. So I think maybe we could talk about that. He's also, poor dude's got a dentist appointment coming up and he's got to get shots.
Oh, man.
he's got a whole bunch of fun not trusting adult scenarios to run through.
Oh man, poor guy. Let me ask you something, dude. Let me ask you something. What are your thoughts on swearing in front of your kids? Like, not necessarily swearing at them, of course, but like just swearing around.
Here's the deal. For us, Owen knows swear words. He knows them and he loves to correct us. So if I swear in the car, he says, that's not a nice word. And I'm like, he's so on it with me that like, I can't. Also, he knows that it gets a reaction out of us when he says them. He doesn't know what they mean, you know, but he'll say them. And so the first couple times it was like, whoa, buddy, what are you doing? You can't say that word, like whatever. And then it was like, we had a couple days where he would just say it, you know, like over and over and over again. And he'd be like, don't react, don't react, don't react. And then he would be like, man, they're not reacting. Kind of, all right, let me do something else. And it's just like, you know, you got to figure it out. But yeah, with those things, I figure they are their own challenge. You know, it's like having a sports car or something. Like, you want to use that, fine. Like, you're responsible for changing the oil. Like, you're responsible for getting it fucking, you know, serviced, man. Because I don't want that responsibility.
I think, you know, on our end, we probably should censor ourselves a bit more than we do, because, like, you know, we just talk like how we really talk, right? And sometimes that is an F-bomb. Sometimes, you know, it's a slew of F-bombs, you know what I mean? Like, and you know, they hear it. I probably should censor myself a little more, but they also understand, rather, and the kids also understand that these are mommy and daddy words. These are mama and papa words, right? Like, you guys shouldn't be saying this. In fact, Shia also will call us out and be like, Papa, you said a potty word. And I'm like, damn, you're right. I did. I probably should have saved that for when you were not around. But, you know, it's just how we are. It's just how we talk, right? And so I don't want to also put on airs for the kids, right? I want to be authentically me. And if I'm upset about something, you know, what does that look like, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm coming across as a real a-hole right now. I don't know.
I don't think so at all. I think it's very, very, very relatable. I don't think you said anything that's particularly controversial. I think that's it. Like, one of my things when we're talking about communication and negotiation that I struggle with is that, like, you've seen me talk to Owen, dude. I talk to him like he's a normal person a lot. And I'm like, hey, what's up, dude? Like, what's going on? You know? And because of that, and like, sometimes he really gets things and he gives it back to me and it's good. And then sometimes it's like, hey man, he's four. Like, he just doesn't get it. Like, you know, he doesn't understand why like something is happening or why he can't do something. And, while he does understand a certain type of communication style, he may not understand like the depth and context and like the reason why like all the other stuff is there. Right. So it's like, also like, you know, allowing your kid to be a kid, I think, is a big thing. You know, I think a lot of people try and like, there's nothing creepier than a little kid that acts like a lot older than they are. You know what I'm saying? Like, a little kid that isn't allowed to be a kid. Like, I just, you know, we talked about the new Nickelodeon docuseries. And child actors, man, like, they're kids that aren't really allowed to be kids. They're kids that have to play kids on TV. And so they have to kind of pretend like they understand things. And you're just like, oh, man, it's really kind of creepy. And so I think, anyways, that's something that I have to work on with Owen, is that, like, I'll, because we were super close, and because he has like a, we have a good way of communicating, that I have to remind myself, hey man, it's just a 4-year-old. Like,
his brain's only four,
just not going to get.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of four, you want to hear something funny? 4-year-olds and bad language. So,
yes,
she, was, I feel like a terrible father right now, but I can't remember if it was Shia or Malena. One of my daughters was reading the book Fox and Socks to us and having a hard time pronouncing it. And it was hilarious, Blake, listening to my child innocently go, fucking socks, fucking socks. I like my fucking socks.
That's hilarious, man. Yeah.
So anyway.
Oh, man. All right. What is jiu-jitsu and communication? Yes. Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about communicating on the mats, or perhaps when you're teaching, or perhaps when you're students. So what does, as a teacher, what does good communication look like as an instructor, as a teacher?
Yeah. You know, when you're teaching class, dude, you really have to reach, when you're teaching anything, whether you're a teacher at a college or high school or elementary school, right? Like, you have to really have the ability to reach multiple audiences, right? And so, and these audiences learn in their own kind of unique ways, right? And like, whether they're audio learners or visual learners or kinesthetic learners, right? And as a jiu-jitsu instructor, it's really up to me to find a way to appeal to those different learners. And, you know, one of the things I have found that's been successful for me is the use of analogies, right? Like, but analogies that make sense, right? Like in the context of what you're doing. And so, and actually one of the things that's been really helpful for me is the use of mnemonic devices, right? And so like, I'll say a lot of stupid shit when I'm teaching because it's memorable, right? And so,
it's true, actually, it is true.
It's like just silly things, right? And people remember it, right? And it just works, right? So like, you know, one of the things is like, when you're hitting a Kimura, you know, you got to rev the motorcycle, pull your knuckles in, and it tightens everything up, right? It rolls your shoulder just a little bit more. And people remember that stuff. And then they see it. So the visual learners are engaged. They hear me talking about these mnemonic devices. So the audio learners are engaged. And then they get a chance to do it, right? You can't just watch a YouTube video, as we all know, and learn jiu-jitsu, right? You actually have to apply it and do it. And so I think all of us are all three to varying degrees. And so finding a way to kind of thread that needle for each of those different learners, I think, is important.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess it's like accommodating all of those different kind of learners with the way that you communicate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then like, you know, when I think about like when you run a class, or even like, even if you participate in a class, right? Like, what does good communication look like in that scenario, right? Like, that to me is like being a good partner. And that means like, if Blake is submitting me, if you have me in a submission, I can't whisper tap, right? I can't tap, tap. The music's loud, right? Like, my ego's hurt. The music's loud. I can't go tap. I have to tap on your body loud enough, hard enough, so that you feel it and know I got to let go of this guy. Otherwise, it's on me if I get hurt at that point, right? If I'm not vocalizing or physically tapping, you know, it's on me at that point. And you know, so that's rolling. But, you know, when I think about like drilling in jiu-jitsu, what does good communication look like when we're drilling? It's more nonverbal communication, right? Like, it's, how do I give you the right amount of resistance so that you are able to get something out of practicing this move over and over again? Right? Yeah. Like the worst thing.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, when we're drilling a new move, it's my favorite thing to do to pick a white or a blue belt and work with them, because I can talk about it the whole time because they'll have a lot of questions. And like, that's how I learn. So I'm like, oh yeah, like, you know, I want, you know, my knee needs to be here, so your knee is there. I need your hips facing this way. I need this and this. And then see, like, this is why this works. Isn't that cool? I'm saying that as much to myself as I'm saying it to them. And like, for me, like, obviously I'm a fucking talker. And like, that is, for me, having somebody who I can communicate with and talk through a technique as we're doing it is like really helpful. I'm a big fan of like, yeah.
I feel that, dude.
I was just
gonna say, I feel that because like when I teach, it forces me to really think about not just how I'm gonna articulate this, but it forces me to think about what are the details that I'm doing when I execute this so that I can share that? And now as I'm executing it, I'm even more focused on those details so they don't slip through my, through the cracks for me, right? So, I mean, yeah that's,
those who teach learn twice, as they say. Yeah, no, it's interesting. I had a move on you a while back that I didn't think I was going to hit on a couple weeks ago. And I actually like, I couldn't control myself because I was legitimately surprised. And hey, it was because I had just,
I'm kidding.
I had just taught that move to someone who was like their second or third day of jiu-jitsu. And it wasn't working. They weren't doing it right. And I was watching them do it and trying to figure out why it wasn't working and having to relearn it. And so then they got it and I was like, that's it. Like, that's the move. And so when I was rolling with you, it was all of those details were there to the point where I could be like, I think this is the thing to do right now. And it just was, and it worked. And it was like, holy shit. And like a hip bump sweep.
Oh yeah. You sure did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hit it and I was like, oh shit, I can't believe that worked. And it sounded so arrogant when I said it. And I was like, oh fuck, I wish I didn't say that. You know what I mean? Like, that's fucking good. Disrespectful. Whatever. But I was like legitimately like, oh my God, like I can't believe that fucking, that's awesome, dude. Like, this shit works. So yeah, it forces you to be like, especially with jiu-jitsu and especially with like new people doing jiu-jitsu, because like there it's sometimes skeptical of what you're doing, you know what I mean, in a way that's like I don't know if this is really works, you know what I mean? And you're like, I know it does, and I know that if you, okay, here's how it will work every time, you know what I mean? I think it's important to communicate with your partner about where you're at, right? Like when it's appropriate. And this is kind of tricky because there are days when I go in and I don't feel very well, right, where I'm like, God, I'm fatigued, didn't get good sleep last night. And sometimes it's helpful to tell your partner, hey man, like today's not the day. Like today I'm gonna be a bit of a wet noodle. And sometimes it's totally okay to go in and be like, hey, look, man, shut the fuck up and you're gonna be whoever you're gonna be today. And if this guy comes at you super hard and you wanna be a wet noodle, be a wet noodle. But don't give him the benefit of the doubt and see what happens. See, because sometimes you'll surprise yourself, right? And then do that with a degree that it's safe, right? Like, don't jeopardize your safety. If you go in and you're like, oh, I separated my shoulder last week, you know, I'm going to start in fucking bottom half guard on that side and let this guy just drill my shoulder into the mat. Like, no. Like, that's not cool. That's when you should really be honest with your partner, because nobody wants to be the person to hurt you. But yeah, that communication about like where you are physically, what's going on with you, how's your sleep, have you eaten? You know, I think we've all done that thing where, yeah, like you roll with somebody and you're in the middle of the roll and something happens in the middle of it and they like get up and have to walk off the mat and you're like, what the fuck? And they're like, maybe they have to go throw up or they just have to sit down. And like, they didn't tell you where they were at when they walked in that day. And you're like, oh man, what did I just do? And it's like, really, like that guy just ate too soon to when he was training. And you know what I mean? Like things like that, where you're just like, I have memories of that stuff where I'm like, oh man, I was a terrible person. It's like, nah, that guy just didn't tell you what he was walking in.
And to your point, dude, it is important to communicate that stuff, right? Because like, if you are legitimately recovering from an injury, right? You know, I banged up my knee last week. Just don't hit any knee bars on my right knee, right? Like, oh great, I'm glad you told me that because I'm working on my knee bars. I'm going to stay away from it now, right? Like, I think it's super important to have those conversations so that, you know, everyone stays safe, right?
Yeah. And I was also going to say another thing about intra partner communication. Mm-hmm. And that's that, it happened a lot more when I was a lower belt, when I would get in a position with somebody and I could tell neither one of us knew what we were supposed to do and it was dangerous. And one of us would like be like, all right, let's just get out of here. Let's like tap and let's reset. And I think it's important to communicate in times like that. Like, for example, like sometimes somebody like 50-50 is a good example, right? Like, I think a lot of people don't know what to do, especially people who just train in the gi, when they get in 50-50. And sometimes it's important to be like, to stop the role and be like, hey, I'm uncomfortable here because I don't know what to do. And you're like, okay, cool. let's take a minute to talk about what you need to do. And you'll get better, right?
Untangle the puzzle. Yeah.
Exactly. Instead of like either hulking out and hurting yourself or, you know, wet noodling and tapping and saying, hey, I'm not comfortable. Or not even saying, hey, I'm not comfortable, just tapping and like not talking about it. It's super. And like, yeah, what's one thing that's like super cool about jiu-jitsu is it's like you can like explore why you're uncomfortable somewhere. Like it's and ask people like, hey, like why was that weird? You know what I mean? Like why was like, you know, another good example would be like, I don't do like there's certain moves that I just don't do, right? And that's because there's not ways to do them safely. There's other moves that can be unsafe that I know how to do safely. And I'm comfortable doing them. And like, you know what I mean? That's because of situations like that where I sat down and was like, well, why is this unsafe? Like, why does this make me feel uncomfortable when I do this? What's the risk?
Jiu-jitsu is as much cerebral as it is physical, right? Like you have to do, we talked about this last time, right? You have to do the work. You have to put in the work to really understand the situation, the position. And once you do, that's when it becomes more of a physical chess game, right? You can't, like you said, you can't try and hulk your way out of everything because you will absolutely get hurt and you will probably hurt the person you're training with.
Yeah. The last thing I was going to say with regards to communication is just like, you know, read the room and like understand where everybody is on their journey. Like if you're teaching something, like teach it at a level that's accessible to everybody. And like I came from an academy that like was fundamentals. Everything was fundamentals. And there was no advanced class. And there was always something to learn. And like, I don't mean like boring shit. I mean, it was just like actual stuff to come in and be like, oh yeah, like that's a thing that I need to learn. And that's because like, I feel like my professor taught like high level jiu-jitsu at a level that was like accessible to everybody. Or that he was teaching fundamental jiu-jitsu that was scaled all the way up to where it was applicable at high levels. And you know, anyways, but yeah, like let's say you're teaching an advanced class, read the room, like, you know, who's in there? What are they trying to learn? What's their background? What's the context?
I agree, man. I agree. You know, if you're teaching an all levels class, one of the classes I teach is all levels. And sometimes it's full of upper belts. Sometimes it's full of lower belts. Sometimes it's full of teenagers. To your point, I have to read the room as the instructor, right? I'm not going to show like an all levels class. It's all white belts. The most complicated, right? Like it's pick and choose wisely.
Yeah. Let me ask you this because you're in a unique position. This kind of segues into the next section we want to talk about, but like you're somebody who teaches both kids and adults, right? So like how does your communication style different when you're teaching kids versus when you're teaching adults?
It's a great question, man. You know, I think when I'm teaching the kids, I really try and keep the emphasis on fun and constantly preaching the idea of safety and consent, right? The idea of it's okay to tap. As much as I am the technique, right? Like the technique is important. It's equally important for you to have fun, right? Like it's the kids class I teach is interesting because there are some kids in there that are really serious about competition. And there are some kids in there who really do not want to compete, but really, really, really have fun with jiu-jitsu. My daughter falls into the latter category right now, at least, right? And so, you know, to the earlier point, right? It's like reaching all audiences, reading the room and emphasizing whether you're competing or not, you should be having fun with this, right? We should all be having fun in jiu-jitsu, particularly the kids. And that's how they stick with it, right? No one wants to do something that they're going to, like, no one wants to do a hobby that feels like work, right? They're going to want to do a hobby that they enjoy and they're going to stick with it because they enjoy it. Right? Like if your dad or mom makes you do jiu-jitsu, you're eventually going to quit, right? You're not going to be a 40-year-old joining a podcast like because you're someone else wants you to do it, right? You do it because you love it, right? And so to answer your question, man, it's keep it light, keep it fun, emphasize the safety and as much as I do the technique, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you this.
Yeah. I was going to say, and so with just with kids, so your emphasis is on, here's how I think I sum it up, is that with kids, you want them to have fun and you're surprised at how much they learn. And with adults, it's like you want them to learn and you're surprised by how much they have fun.
That's exactly it, dude. You nailed it. I'll tell you, just what they say, Wednesday, yesterday, I was teaching the kids class, which my daughter's in. And I was teaching an arm drag and everyone else in the class was getting it. Milena and her partner were struggling with it a little bit. And I was trying to walk her through it and I could see that it wasn't connecting for her. And I could feel myself getting irritated and unfairly so, right? Like, dude, she's 8 and she's doing this for fun. So I stepped out of the situation. I brought in another coach. I was like, hey, you know what, Coach X, I don't want to give this person's name. I don't know if she wants to be mentioned, but it was Coach X is going to help you out here. I'm going to go walk around a little more, okay, guys? And so I gave her an opportunity to kind of just hear it from a different voice, right? Because like I didn't want to take the fun away from her, right? Because I was getting frustrated. And I also feel like it was very unfair of me to get frustrated at her in that moment. And so I was like, just step away and like maybe she needs another voice here. And that was fine. And this coach who came in to help out told me, she's like, when they're rolling, she's like, hey, she's looking, she's like actually looking at you while she's rolling. She wants you to coach her right now. She wants you to tell her something. Oh, she does? Great. Let me do that. Let's go, Milena. Okay, put your foot on her hip. Right. So like I got back into it. And so it was nice to kind of just like step away, rely and lean on one of the coaches in the room to kind of have my back in that situation and in turn keep it fun for Milena and then jump right back in when we're ready to go, right? So it's I don't know, dude. And I'll be honest too, I don't know if that's the right way to go about this. I'm fairly new to teaching kids, right? And it's hard. It's very, very different. And
so crazy.
It's wild, dude. I am going with my gut. And so hopefully it's the right instinct, but I don't know. We'll see. And hopefully, Milena and I have a strong enough relationship where she will tell me, Papa, I didn't like that. Or Papa, I didn't like the way he spoke or whatever. She'll tell me.
Yeah.
And she hasn't yet. So
yeah, I can't. Yeah. Just thinking about how many times I learned an arm drag before I actually ever understood
it's hard,
it.
Man. It's especially for an 8-year-old, And honestly, to be fair, the position I was showing it from, it's like, this is a little advanced, Like I'm holding her to the same standard as some of the other kids in the class who have been training since they were 2 and competing just as long. And it's not fair to her, right? Yeah. So
what was it from?
The guard, just out of curiosity. Guard. So I'm in closed guard. Sorry, I have you in my closed guard and I'm arm dragging you into an arm bar or a flower sweep, which is honestly, I taught the same move to the adults an hour later and some of them were struggling and I had to really kind of check myself like, dude, it's not fair of you to get frustrated with Milena for not knowing this. She's seen it in 4 classes. You know what I mean? Like not even, she's seen it in 2 classes.
Yeah.
Take it easy. Take it easy. So I had to check myself.
Yeah. Good. That's good. That's interesting context, when I'm training with Owen in the garage, it's looking like it's going to be time for him to come to the gym. I always say that like every week, but like he's really fired up. He's the one, asking me if he can go put his gi on and stuff like that right now. And so I feel like he and soccer just wrapped up. So I think it's a good move for him. Quick transition, man. It is the time of the show where we talk about snacks.
Snack time. So let me tell you something, dude. I heard myself chewing on the podcast. And I was mortified. I was like, I can no longer do these as surprise snacks on the podcast. I have to change the format again. So, and this time is going to be a little bit different as well. So it's not a snack, actually. It's a sauce, a seasoning, a dressing, something, yeah. So it's the Momofuku Chili Oil Crunch, and it's good, dude. It's good.
Is it?
The reason we have it in the house, actually, it's kind of an interesting story. So Van bought it, and she bought it at Target. Okay, you can get this at Target. I will say it's actually, sorry, Trader Joe's, you're not a sponsor. I'm going to say it. It's better than Trader Joe's one. Okay, so she got it at Target. And the reason she got it at Target is because she follows David Chang, who's the head chef at Momofuku. He's the creator of Momofuku, right? And so she follows him and saw that he makes this really good chili oil crunch. And it's only available if you purchase it, like you order it online and he has to send it, they send it to you. And recently they changed to have it available at Target. So she bought it and it's really good. Now, if I were to score it, I'd probably give it an 8.4.
That's and high.
It's high because it's really good. It's spicy. It's not for the faint of heart, my guy. It's not for the faint of heart. The only reason I'm cutting some points is Van looked at me like I was an idiot when I told her this, but it's a little too oily, yep. At least so far, right? Like, I know oil is in the name of it. It's a little too oily. So, yeah. But
all right. Yeah. I mean, David Chang is known for his spices and his sauces. Like, yes. That's kind of one of his things. So, yes. Yeah, it's a popular, I'm tempted to go get some right now just because I literally can't taste or smell like anything. So I would love to just to test my mettle on some. Yeah, dude, I worked in, I don't know if you know this about me. I worked in, quote, unquote, Asian food restaurants.
I did not.
Oh, dude, I worked at, I worked at P.F. Chang's for probably like 5 years. And then I worked at, I was a corporate trainer for Chang's. And then I was a server at a Japanese fine dining restaurant, which was, it was Japanese fine dining and teppanyaki. And then I worked there for a while. And then I went over to Chin Chin. In your old hood, up there on Sunset. So I worked at Chin Chin on Sunset for like maybe another 3 years. So all told, I had like a good 8 years in quote unquote Americanized like Asian food.
And that doesn't even include the time you spent modeling for TV shows as a waiter.
Exactly. Alongside that.
If you guys don't know, Blake is famous for his, I'll let you tell yourself. I don't even know. Maybe I shouldn't have said it.
No. We're there. So years ago, what Uday is referring to is years ago, I used to play music, and so when I was playing music, I moved out of LA. So I moved back to LA, and I was trying to figure my life out. And my mom at the time was a photo producer. She produced photo shoots, and she was producing a photo shoot for Getty Images, which, if you don't know, Getty is like they hold kind of all of the stock images. So there's a giant catalog of any kind of image you want, and you go and you pay a licensing fee, and then you get to use that image within the terms and agreements of the license on like your website or in your ad or whatever it is. And so my mom was in charge of a photo shoot for Getty, and they needed, it was a whole like hotel setup, and they needed a bellboy. And so my mom was like, hey, you come in, make $200, like, you know, and I'm like thinking to myself, these photos are never going to see the light of day because this catalog is massive. And like, who's going to need to see a picture of like a bellboy holding a check, like handing somebody a check? Like this is silly. Like, great. So I went and then did the shoot, didn't even see the finished photos. Years later, like five at least, maybe more like 6 years later, I'm sitting at home. I've like, my life is completely different. I work as a copywriter for a proper company. Like I have a, like a sit at a desk job, and I'm watching Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and he has this long extended bit about big pharma kickbacks, about how the agents and reps for these pharmaceutical companies like write off like the craziest fucking things. And so like right at the punchline of one of these jokes, he just needs a perfect stock image of a skinny white guy handing somebody a check. Happens to be my picture. And it's just like on the punchline, boom, there I am. And it's like, you know, 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. And I'm like, oh, wow. Well, surely nobody saw that, you know, like whatever. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I didn't even think it was real. It was like so surreal. Yeah. And then my phone starts blowing up. My friends were like, dude, what the hell did we just see? And then I come into work the next day and my coworkers had printed out still like that shot and put it all over my desk.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
So oh anyways, my yeah. gosh. Sometimes, especially now, man, like the internet doesn't forget. Like whatever goofy thing you did is out there. Poor Timothy Chalamet is like, people are playing like, you know, videos of him like rapping at his school talent show when he was like 11. Yeah.
I heard that video got him the role as Wonka.
Did it really?
That's what I read. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, anyways, that's that story.
It's a great story. I was tickled when I saw that on your Instagram. Tickled.
That said, let's pay some bills. As you guys may know, the sponsor of this podcast is Fluid Tactical Electrolyte Drink Mix. Jiu-Jitsu is a very taxing sport. We sweat a ton on the mats. And it's important to not only hydrate with water, but to have electrolytes, salt, magnesium, other things that your body loses in that sweat that are going to help you retain your hydration and perform better. So Fluid Tactical Electrolyte Drink Mix provides rapid hydration. It's a mix that helps you hydrate better than anything else. It replaces minerals that are lost in sweat without excess sugar or any added junk. It is a must-have for firefighters, construction workers, solar farms, oil fields, or anyone else who's working under heat and stress.
Yeah, guys, and this stuff was designed by professionals from real science. Tactical is a no-nonsense way of preventing cramps and fighting dehydration during long, hot days on the job or long, hot training sessions. Super easy to use. It mixes easily in water. Simply add one packet into any 16-ounce water bottle. Shake it up until it's dissolved.
It's made right here in the USA. Their ingredients are U.S. sourced and inspected for purity. Their mixing and packaging takes place in a GMP inspected and approved facility in Los Angeles, California. And it comes in 5 fruity flavors. They're delicious. You can pick one or you can get a variety pack. You can find Fluid at livefluid.com or just search for Fluid Tactical Electrolyte Drink Mix on Amazon.
Indeed.
Pop culture, Uday. What are you watching, listening to, Brother, enjoying?
Can I tell you? I'm super geeked out. Super geeked out to talk about X-Men 90 freaking 7. I love it. I love it. I was hooked on this show from the day it premiered on October 31st, 1992, I want to say it was. Hooked. And what's cool about this is right now I've been rewatching the original X-Men cartoon with the girls, and they love it. They have their favorite characters and everything. Malena, every time she's in an elevator, she'll pretend to open the elevator doors with her hand like Magneto. It's the cutest thing ever, dude. It's so awesome. And so like, yeah. And so this show, I'm so grateful that Disney put this show out, dude. Like it has been such a trip down memory lane watching these original cartoons, and it's been so nostalgic to watch the new episodes. As a matter of fact, as soon as we hop off tonight, I'm going to be watching the latest episode. It's just, it's been so, yeah, it's so nostalgic. Like, they have a bunch of the original voice actors. And, you know, I've been a comic book fan since before I can remember. And so, you know, just a little nugget of my childhood, a little nostalgia. It's been a lot of fun. Have you watched it? Are you a fan?
I'm a fan, but I'm not a comic book guy. So I remember liking it a lot as a kid, and it was cool, man, because it was like fighting, you know, it. It's bad guys and good guys. Like, of course, it's cool, man. They have like these crazy muscles. Like, yeah, like I thought it was awesome. This takes you back, huh?
Yeah, dude.
What's funny, man, I know that if we put it on, Owen's going to get just so sucked in.
He's going to love it.
Because, he loves those shows, and we have to be careful with him because he gets so fired up. And two, dude, for some reason, he loves older cartoons. Like, he goes crazy for DuckTales, dude.
What? Really?
It's so weird. That's awesome. Animation is so bad. The storylines are fucking terrible. And he'll just sit down and be like, nah, let's watch DuckTales, dude. Like, are you kidding me?
I love it.
Like, you have like literally this greatest animation of all time at your fingertips. Anything you want to watch. And you want to watch this like fuzzy crap that's like not even formatted to our TV on Disney Plus.
My God. I love that. Yeah. I love it. He's an old soul, dude.
Yeah, man, for sure.
Awesome.
I'm glad you're getting into that, dude. I'm watching just some stuff you can watch with your kids that is not going to, that is also going to be cool for you. And that is Beastmaster. Have you watched Beastmaster yet?
No, tell me about it.
So cool, dude. It's like American Ninja Warrior, but it's like international. So they have hosts from all of the countries that are represented. You've got Anderson Silva is a host.
Oh, what?
Yeah, for Brazil. Okay. And CM Punk is one of the hosts from America. And then I can't remember anybody else, but just seeing, I was like, why is Anderson Silva on a show that my son is watching, right? Like, what's going on? One, so happy to see him getting paid and not getting paid to get punched in the face. But dude, the show is just incredible, dude. It's like these awesome feats of strength, you know, crazy obstacle course, very American Gladiators.
Netflix?
Yeah, Netflix. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I think this is like the second or third season of it. And the other thing I'm watching is It Cake season 3, which just came out.
That show. So good.
I fucking so addicting. Love that show, dude. I love that show.
It's another one. You can just have it on in the background and just like, is it cake? And I get sucked in, right? Like, I don't know. Is it cake? Like,
dude, Owen gets so, we all like, we're all on the couch and like, he'll do it. He'll be like, Mom, which one do you think it is? Dad, which one do you think it is? I think it's this one. No, I think it's this one. So fun, dude. I highly recommend, dude, good, clean fun. The kids get into it. Like, nothing weird about it. As far as I know, hopefully nobody gets canceled. Between now and when this thing
goes out.
Yeah.
we talked about this watching that Nickelodeon show, the show. Dude, that was rough. I think I told you that I couldn't make it through episode 3. I just don't know. I can't watch that stuff.
Yeah.
Van was like, oh, let me tell you all about it. You missed all this stuff. I'm like, no, I don't wanna know. I don't wanna know. I know horrible shit happened. And I hope everyone who deserves to get punished gets thrown under the jail.
Yeah. The freaking, the Nickelodeon docuseries, it is exactly what you think it is. Be prepared if you're going to watch it. I watched the whole thing. I thought it was interesting. Unlike a lot of docuseries lately, you know, Becca always complains about this and I totally agree with her, is that like, they just stretch out like what could have been a 4-part series into like a 12-part series because they know you're going to watch it. They tell you what you saw, they tell you a little bit, and they tell you what you're going to see. And then the episode starts over again. And you're like, oh my God, wait, you know, it's like, oh yeah. Anyway, so this is not like that. It's pretty concise, but it is exactly it. It's exactly what you think it's going to be. So be prepared. I will say they just released the Diana Nyad, who is a swimmer and then a TV host, a sports host. She's the woman who swam from Cuba to Florida in her 60s. Actually, super inspiring, incredible documentary.
Where is that?
On Netflix. They just Netflix. Put it back out. It's from like 2013, I think. Okay. Worth a spin. Wish I could remember what it was called, but Diana Nyad swimming across the Gulf.
Cool. Yeah.
It's super cool. We watched it last night. I had some other stuff to do last night and I put it on being like, I'm just going to, you know, put this on in the background. And then I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. It's so inspiring, dude.
I'll check that out. It's good.
It's inspiring. Okay. And it's also, yeah, it reminds me of, you understand how like selfish sometimes these things that we do are. Like, they're incredible, but like how much they impact the people around us makes you very grateful for them. All right. Takeaways, dude.
You know, when I think about communication, you know, to me it's like such an important aspect of every part of life, right? Whether it's work, parenting, relationships, training, teaching, right? Like, it's so important, and it's just super important to have that buttoned up, you know? And so, or even if it's not buttoned up, right? Like, just like in everything in life, nothing's ever going to be perfect, but just like always kind of thinking about it, right? Like, what is my communication? How am I coming across? Am I effectively communicating, right? Like, is this something to always be top of mind? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think like in jiu-jitsu and in parenting, more is more. I think these are, when it comes to communication, I think that there's times when you want, you know, I think the nuance to play out, you want subtlety to play out. But I think that there, when it comes to your kids, I think there is more harm in the things you don't say in a lot of times than the things that you're like willing to say. Or even willing to correct, right? Like, and then in jiu-jitsu, like, I think similarly, like, there's no harm in saying the thing or asking the thing. I think there's more harm in not.
I like that. Communication, more is more.
All right. This has been episode 18 of Grappling with Fatherhood. Nice, man. We forgot to plug Uday's BJJ Fanatics, by the way.
Oh.
So, Uday, where can they find it? What is it?
Elite No Gi Fundamentals on BJJ Fanatics. There might be a coupon code out there right now for this month. Check it out, bjjfanatics.com. Look for yours truly, and you'll find it there.
Yeah, and if you guys want, you can find us on Instagram. I am Blake of Today, at Blake of Day, on pretty much every social media platform. Uday is at Udjitsu.
That is correct.
And gorilla.den.
.bjj.
.bjj. So close this week. Gorilla.den.bjj. And then if you want to drop us an email, let us know what you liked, what you didn't like, questions, concerns, comments. We're always looking for questions to answer. You could shoot us an email at grapplingwithfatherhoodpod@gmail.com. I think that's it. So
yeah,
until next time, protect your neck.
Peace.